The name of the book is The Power of Human, and the author is Adam Waitz, and I've got Adam on the line right now. Adam, good morning. Welcome to The Morning Show.
Thanks for having me.
So your book seems to contain two different, very, very interesting and important concepts. One of them is we are dehumanizing ourselves more and more, and then you also talk about how humans and robots can work together. Two great concepts. It almost seems like two different books. So what is the connection between these two concepts in your book?
Yeah, so the first part of the book presents a solution to this issue that we're being pulled apart in society. You know, people are more separated by social class, political party, etc. And I think technology plays a role in that. Technology mediates our conversations. It substitutes for face-to-face interaction. And so we're less deeply engaged with each other than we were in previous decades. The second part of the book provides even more of a solution in terms of how can we work together with machines so as not to lose our humanity in the process.
So what you mean by dehumanizing is, of course, again, limited face-to-face conversation. We do have conversation, just it's with somebody miles away or in the next room versus right there in front of us.
That's right. That's right. So social media and technology offers this unprecedented degree to connect with people all over the world, but the nature of those connections is more limited than what we have when we're right in the room with another person.
Now, you also feel that fake news somehow contributes to this. How do you feel it does?
Well, I think fake news is a problem in producing political polarization, where people on the left and the right are more divided than any point before in recent history. But the interesting thing about fake news is I think it's not only a problem online, but also on cable, on all the news channels. And I think social media sort of feeds off of cable news, and it creates this bad cycle that pulls us apart even further.
We're talking to Adam Waitz this morning. He is the author of The Power of Human. So it's ironic that you would try to introduce robots into this whole thing. You would think that working with robots maybe will contribute more to dehumanizing us, but that's not the take that you have.
Yeah, well, part of this is just my throwing up my hands and saying, you know, whether I want to work with robots or not, the folks in Silicon Valley have already sort of made that decision for us. They're introducing technology into our lives, whether we like it or not. So how can we form a peace treaty with the robots so that we can better feel like human beings?
Well, Adam, I'll be honest with you. I mean, how common are these robots? I don't think I've ever met one. Where are they?
Well, this is the strange thing. We sort of let them into our homes without even knowing it. We thought the robots would look like Rosie on the Jetsons, but they're in our phones. It's Siri on our iPhones. It's Alexa, the Amazon voice-activated assistant. It's algorithms that help us search things on Google. So when I say robots, they don't sort of take the form that we would traditionally think of as robots. They're sort of omnipresent, and we let them get into our lives without realizing it. And so I want to figure out how to push back so our lives aren't completely dominated by these robots.
Well, you're absolutely right. And by the way, I want to compliment you. You know, I've seen some of your YouTube videos, and you look way too young to remember Rosie from the Jetsons. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yul Brynner is the gunslinger on Westworld. Who knows? That's one robot I don't want to deal with. But no, you're right. You know, my oldest son, he just got Alexa just recently. And yeah, this uh-huh. woman with a robotic voice is talking to him. And I'll be honest with you, I'd just rather do it the old-fashioned way and Google something, which is ironic because since when is Googling anything old-fashioned?
Right. That's the funny thing. Now, Google is the old-fashioned way. I guess the real old-fashioned way is you ask another human being. I mean, that sounds pretty novel right now. But I do think there's some benefit to these low-level robots like the Google search. You know, what Google can do is it can offload a lot of frustration that we had. You know, when we need to think of something, when we need to find the right restaurant or the perfect gift. I do think there's some utility to these programs and that they can reduce a lot of emotional burden. So I talk about one way we can form a partnership with robots is they can perform some emotional labor so that we can do the more fine-tuned stuff. Okay, you know, Google, help me find this Italian restaurant in this price range, and then I can narrow it down rather than spending the whole day going all over town trying to figure out what to eat.
So how do we bring the human touch back into all this? For example, rather than asking one of the robots what the best restaurant is, how about asking a friend of ours? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, I think, interestingly, a lot of the book talks about why humans still matter in the age of the robot, and I think we would be more satisfied with the restaurant recommendation that comes from a friend rather than Google, even though Google purports to know all of our deepest thoughts and feelings and fears and preferred pasta dishes. So I think asking the friend might get you the preferred result. What you want Google for is the convenience, for the efficiency, for the stress reduction.
You're a college professor, so you probably deal with this all the time in the middle of one of your lectures. Not to say that you're not a dynamic guy, but you probably look around and guess what you see all around the room. You see your students, you know, they're on their phones.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, what would somebody like you say to them, seeing as how what you've been talking about?
Well, I eventually I just had to ban technology in class because, you know, a lot of people say, well, I take notes better on my computer, or I need this iPad to assist me with the lecture. Now the research is out that you actually process information more deeply when you're not taking notes online. And furthermore, there's other studies showing that the presence of technology in the classroom doesn't just lower the grades of the person using the technology, it also lowers the grades of students sitting in that class not using the technology. So once the data came out, I said, all right, that's it, no more. But occasionally you do see students looking down at their legs for some strange reason, and you know something is up.
Now, did you ever ask them, look, why are you guys sitting in a group texting people who aren't in the group? Why aren't you just talking to the other person in the group?
Yeah, well, I think that's the funny thing. There's a social norm against speaking to your classmates during the lecture, but if you can do it through text, you know, the professor's not going to know unless that conversation makes it onto Twitter, which unfortunately sometimes it does.
You know, that is a great point you just brought up. Where do you, as a college professor, where do you feel this intense need to post every last millisecond of our lives online came from? Because, you know, I'm 57 years old. I did not grow up in a time when, you know, we did this. And I have absolutely no desire to do it now, but I guarantee you, back in the day, if I would have had that technology, I wouldn't have done it then. My life is my life. I value my privacy, and I just assume that nobody cares about what I'm doing. What do people say to you when you ask them that question?
Well, you know, I think I'm sort of at the middle of the generation between the full-on digital natives, the people who are just born in this era of posting everything about your life, and the people before that. So I sort of understand both sides of it. I think the interesting thing about this need to share everything is that it feels very rewarding. It feels extremely rewarding, and I've friends who have studied this, that people will sacrifice money in a lab experiment to be able to post something about themselves online. So this is something that people feel is as valuable as earning a little extra money. And it's just this, I think, very American need to self-express. All right, we love self-expression. We love feeling like we have our personality, our uniqueness, our independence, and posting, you know, even what we had for lunch, gets that information out there. So it's intrinsically rewarding. I don't remember how we used to do that prior to social media. I'm sure it manifested in other ways, though.
If people want to find out more about you and more about your book, The Power of Human, where can they go, please?
Yeah, so my website is my name, adamwaitz.com, adamwaytz.com. The book is available everywhere in audio and hardcover formats. It's the power of human and available at all retailers that you can think of, Amazon, Apple Books, Barbara's, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and IndieBound.
Or we can just Google you.
That's right. You can always do that.
Adam Waitz, W-A-Y-T-Z. And what I always tell, I teach an educational technology class, and we talk about all kinds of technology that teachers can use, and students start to get worried because there's so much of it. And what I always tell them, and I think you can relate to this, is make the technology work for you. Don't ever let it be the other way around.
That's exactly right.
Adam Waitz, The Power of Human is the name of the book. It's been an extreme pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me.